There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Happy to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Hello, everybody. Wendy Nix, Dan Graziano, Ryan Clark, and Coach Jack Del Rio. We will start right away with the Week 6 finale. We go straight to Lambeau, and it was a game. There's no question about that. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers playing host to Matthew Stafford and the Lions for Monday Night Football. A place, by the way, where Detroit has actually played quite well. First play from scrimmage, that continued for the Lions. Stafford to Kerryon Johnson, who flips it back to Stafford right this from
is,
the get-go.
This is how you want to start the game. They hadn't been going deep. You get the flea flickers. It draws the safeties up, and we know that Matt Stafford can make big throws down the field. You're feeling really good if you're the Detroit Lions.
You sure are. I love the flea flicker. Next Lions drive, always have. Just saying. Stafford connects with Marvin Hall for a gain of 58 yards. Stafford, 168 passing yards. Oh, that was the first quarter, the most in any first quarter throughout his career. Matt Patricia likes it. Later in the drive, Johnson again. One official signals a touchdown, one signals short.
Well, one of them could see the ball and the other couldn't. So
well,
I don't know why the other guy was signaling.
Anybody.
I don't know why the guy was signaling short was signaling anything at all. That's the question. But the guy on the left could see the ball.
All right, we'll get to that. Fourth quarter, Lions lead 19-13, third and seven from the Detroit 12. Rodgers, Darius Shepherd bounces up and Justin Coleman picks it off.
Defense loves that. A turnover in the red zone, that's huge
creepy.
Right there. And a little drop ball led to it. Thank you very much. Give me that ball. I'm down the sideline.
43 yards, 55 on the return.
Illegal use of hands, hands to the face. Defense, number 90.
Well, that was with the Rodgers sack. And a look at that hands in the face penalty. It's called illegal use of the hands. Anyone want to take this one?
Yeah, I can take it. He definitely had his hands on the shoulder pad. That's not in the rule book, his hands to the face. So it's a blown call.
All right, fair enough. Rodgers looking to capitalize.
That's
third and five.
That's a dive right there. Oh, my goodness.
And
I mean,
he does.
I could have caught that pass.
Yeah.
He just basically handed it off to him.
Beauty.
Stafford, the Lions look to extend the lead second and six from the Detroit 41. This to Marvin Jones. Pass fell incomplete with a lot of contact, and it seems that Redmond grabs and hooks Jones before the ball arrives. The Lions then forced to punt.
I don't think it would have been overturned.
The way they're
not overturning
Coach
pass
can't
interference,
throw it there.
I don't think he would have got it.
Well, Rodgers again drops back, trying to buy time. Flag down, Rodgers incomplete.
Illegal use of hands, hands to the face. Defense, number 90.
So that's the second illegal hands to the face penalty. Ryan.
Yeah, on the same guy.
Yes, it's on the same guy. What he would be is a great flopper in basketball because he really sold both of those calls.
Here's Flowers, by the way, on that call.
I think hands to the chest was a penalty. I thought hands to the face. But I had him right here in the chest. Second time I changed it to right here. This is a move I've been doing. A lot of people do it. If I slipped up right here, then I would say that was a flag. Never slipped. Kept it right here. He saw his hands to the face. That's what he called.
All right, we'll get back to that. Packers drive kept alive by the penalty in the very next play. Jamal Williams takes the carry. Lions look like they'll try to let him score, but Williams goes down short of the end zone.
Very heads-up play right there by the running back, knowing to go down. Excellent job by Matt LaFleur. I thought last night for a young coach, I thought he did a great job with game management.
All right, and then, of course, the game-winning field goal. And, Coach, this was you last night. Four major blown calls tonight. All four went against the Lions. The DB going for the interception called for unnecessary roughness, a non-call on a blatant DPI, defensive pass interference, and two ridiculous calls for hands to the face. Refs can't guess and cannot get these wrong. The Lions would have won by two scores. And look, you know, you never want to blame the officiating. All kind of things go into the way a game ends up. But we've talked, this has really been an issue from the outset of the season. And last night, you know, there were a lot of voices in agreement on this, Coach.
Well, I feel robbed. I mean, I'm watching the game. I'm a fan, just like the rest of America. I'm watching. I don't really care whether the Lions win, the Packers win. But what I want to see Matthew Stafford get an opportunity to come answer. And we don't get that answer. We don't get entertained by Matthew Stafford because they're able just to run the clock out. Now, a nice job by Green Bay doing that, but the field goal to win it, you know, the walk-off field goal, that wouldn't have happened. He would have had to kick the field goal with about a minute 45 left, and we would have got to see Matthew Stafford bring him back, except we had a blown call.
Yeah, and I think the problem is we have to sit around and talk about officiating more so than we get to talk about football. And it seems that each week it's starting to become worse and worse. And it used to be that we'd watch the catch call and try to figure out, okay, what's a catch, what's not a catch. Now it's become every single call in most of these games that we're trying to figure out, okay, is this legal? Is it illegal? And if it's not one of those things, can it be fixed by replay? And if you're Al Riveron, the head of officiating, you have an issue here. You have a problem. And the NFL always talks about protecting the shield when it comes to players' behavior. They better start protecting the shield against its own officials because right now they're ruining this game.
But are we talking about this more? Are we seeing it more? Or is it really happening more, though? I mean, you just don't know.
There's no data to indicate that bad calls are happening more. It's all anecdotal evidence. We feel that way. Why do we feel that way? The prevalence of replay. The presence in every single broadcast booth of a former official whose job ostensibly would be to help you interpret rules, but instead is now commenting on literally every single call or non-call. You say it's unfortunate we have to talk about this. We don't have to talk about this. You say you're robbed of a Matt Stafford drive. We could talk about Aaron Rodgers and Alan Lazard and the great plays they were making. But officiating becomes the conversation. It's to the detriment of the game. I think it's to the detriment of what we do. And I think, honestly, it's not because it's gotten worse. I would love to see it. If somebody has a study out there that bad calls are
one,
more of them now.
They'll be one if it's not buried. But let me
just tell
you, we all have high-def TVs at home.
Right.
We're watching
but
what's happening. Don't lie and pretend that these things aren't happening. The calls are happening.
It's not
24 out of 25 have not been overturned TIs. That's
an entirely
right
different
there.
Issue because that's brand new.
All you have to do is look at those 25 plays and see how many should have been overturned.
Last night was not going to be overturned because they're holding it to significantly hindered. And he put his arm there, and they would not have concluded based on all the reviews we've seen this year.
What they're holding it to is not what the rulebook says. That's their own interpretation.
But they didn't.
That's
as we discussed this last week, they didn't want to put that rule in anyway. And that's why
it's a boycott. We're watching a boycott.
Well, I think, and therein lies the rub, right? They didn't want to put it in. The coaches got together. There was pressure, and now there seems to be a real lack of overturning.
It's a lack of clarity. And I know Dan says, you know, we get to choose what we talk about. But when the calls affect the outcome of a game, when it's not just that it's slowing the game down, when it's not just that we're tired of seeing these calls be wrong, when four calls go against a team and that team eventually loses because of the outcome of the plays that were after the calls,
right,
then it's something you have to talk about if you're going to talk about football.
Well, I will also say this, Dan.
For years.
You talked about the statistical evidence. What we do know is there are more penalties being called. That we can measure. And that for sure has happened by quite a decent
margin.
Yeah,
the most calls since 2001 and the most accepted since 1970.
That
those
is not
are
anecdotal.
Facts.
There are more calls
facts.
This year through 6 weeks where teams lost the game because of a bad call. And I guarantee if you look at it, Denver with the phantom roughing call when they lost the game earlier in the season. I mean, so I'm just telling you, there have been calls that are guessing by the officials, and these calls are impacting the game and costing guys. They're going to end up costing guys jobs.
I know we're going to talk about it later on, but I think we can agree that the officials are in a situation where they're confused and where they are at some point making calls because they feel like, oh, it'll be overturned, et cetera. I think the officials are in a bad spot, obviously, and you know, obviously it looks at this point like they're overwhelmed.
Well, and to that end, we all agree there's an issue. So we'll discuss a little later on what the solution might be, because that's really what it's about, right? Fixing this and moving forward and protecting the game that we all appreciate. Let's talk about one other thing, though, from last night, because there were a number of interesting things. With a minute 36 to go in this game, and we showed it to you earlier, Jamal Williams had a chance to run in a touchdown as the Lions' defense didn't try to tackle him. Instead, he sat down at the 2-yard line, and, Coach, I believe you called that, aptly so, a heads-up play. Explain that.
I think it was a heads-up play. I think it was well-managed by Matt LaFleur throughout this ball game. I saw examples of great clock management, game management. The first half, the way he managed it, he ended up running the clock down. They kicked the field goal going into halftime, right? Teams that score right before the half, a high percentage of those teams that score before the half and don't allow a score before the half, that ends up being a winning formula for you. And then at the end of the game, the running back having the awareness, obviously they had covered that decision or that situation, and he handled it properly. They kick a field goal, an easy field goal, and a walk-away victory.
I think, you know, we've seen this from Todd Gurley, Ahmad Bradshaw, Maurice Jones-Drew.
Right.
And so we've seen different running backs do this, and even sometimes you see them with just staying in bounds. And so when you are the carrier of the ball, you have an opportunity to help your team in more ways than one when you can make smart plays like this. And I think this is something that has to be covered during the week. This is something that has to be covered on the sideline and in the huddle before the play.
The fantasy guys are mad right now. Whoever has
that's a whole different discussion.
Oh, heavily rostered, so I think that's all right. But yeah, I remember I was covering that Giants Super Bowl where Ahmad Bradshaw went in toward the end and they were telling him not to. It would freak me out to pull up short if I'm losing the game. Like, I understand all the math and what's probable and what's not, but down 2 points, they're giving you six. To turn those down and then say, oh, we'll just kick the field goal.
I was actually nervous going into it because it could be a bad snap, a bad
right.
It could be
so
shanked.
If you're losing, I think that's why it's a little bit gutsier to make that call, but it worked out for them. And LaFleur's been a guy.
Ask Rex Ryan. I got Rex one time. went in with
that's
the Jags blooded. Against and had Mojo do it against the Jets and Rex Ryan. And we were behind. And there is a risk. But, again, the ability to snap and kick an extra point, basically, is what it is. That's a no-brainer.
Listen, I bet he still got choice words about that if he were here. He's got a long memory, that one. We do have news from within the division. This is new on NFL Live from our Adam Schefter. This with regards to the Chicago Bears. They've placed Akeem Hicks on IR. Schefter tweeting it, but the team also confirming it. So that is a loss for the Bears. Yeah. Up next for Chicago, by the way, the New Orleans Saints. The inaugural XFL draft began today. Eight teams will stock their rosters in a snake-style draft over 2 days. Teams are picking in five phases divided by position groups, starting with offensive skill position players today. So we'll get the full breakdown of the XFL quarterbacks. Philip Walker, another NFL veteran, assigned today. The former Colts QB will play for the Houston Roughnecks. Aaron Murray will see the former Georgia Bulldogs suit up for the Tampa Bay Vipers. This is Landry Jones. Again, these are the players assigned. They will go by position groups. And here are our quarterbacks. Again, Philip Walker, the veteran assigned today. He'll be with the Houston Roughnecks. And Aaron Murray, the former Georgia Bulldog, as I mentioned, he will play for the Tampa Bay Vipers. Well, we say hello now to Tom Luganville. You know him from his work as a college football analyst. What you may not know is he has a history with the XFL, winning a championship in 2001 while he was the quarterback's coach for the Los Angeles Extreme. All right, Tom, an interesting way to start the draft with quarterbacks being assigned to teams. How did that play out?
Well, it played out really well, and I think the purpose behind it, Wendy, was to try to create competitive balance top to bottom within the league, give the coaches and their respective staffs an opportunity to go into training camp with a quarterback they feel could potentially win a championship for them. So they've had the past several months to break down the college tape, break down the training camp NFL tape, even maybe some active roster duty with a guy like Landry Jones, and then turn those names into the league and say, hey, here's our board of ranked quarterback. Here's the first guy that we would like. So it's really about making sure there's some parity within the league, and it begins and ends at the quarterback position.
All right, Tom, moving over to the rest of the skill position players, what do you like from that phase of the draft?
I like that there is experience at the National Football League level. I think the one thing people got to understand about the XFL, this is not a developmental league. And so you've got guys like Christian Michael, second-round draft choice from the Seattle Seahawks, who gets taken by St. Louis in this draft in the first round. Another running back, Matt Jones, a former third-round draft choice of three NFL teams. He also gets taken by St. Louis in this draft. And then wide receiver Sammy Coates, played a lot of football, former third-round draft choice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, big, fast, physical wideout that can create some big plays downfield. So it's about having some established experience and proven productivity.
Well, Tom, thank you. We look forward to watching this play out. Of course, the XFL coming in February. Meanwhile, back in the NFL, it could be decision day in Tennessee. You may remember Marcus Mariota benched Sunday following his second interception. This was in favor of Ryan Tannehill. After the game, though, head coach Mike Vrabel declined to say who would continue or be his starting quarterback in week 7, said he wanted to have a number of discussions prior to that decision. It's been a rough go for Mariota since he was selected second overall by the Titans. in 2015. His QBR just slightly above the league average. He's also taken 155 sacks. Only three quarterbacks, Russell Wilson, Matt Stafford, and Aaron Rodgers, have been sacked more times during that span. Again, you never know, but it seems like a day that the Titans may announce the decision. Will Marcus Mariota continue as the starting quarterback? Should he, if you're the one making this call, Coach?
Well, if Coach Vrabel, you know, decided to take him out of a game, that means there's a question. They signed Ryan Tannehill for a reason. They brought him in as a quality backup, somebody that has been a starter in the league. So I think the door's been opened. I mean, he benched him on Sunday, and so I think, you know, obviously it's not gone the way they hoped it would, and they have a backup plan that with a guy that has some starting experience. So I would think they'll probably make that move.
And then you have to wonder if it's the end of the road, because we talked about this really being the decision year for Mariota. And you know what's interesting is September he was okay. Mm-hmm. He started off on what seemed like solid ground, and then when we sort of turned the page to October, things came unraveled.
Wait, listen to that. In September, okay. He started out on what seemed like solid ground. No, I just want you. I want you to listen to how we're speaking of a number two overall pick.
This is why I suspect
Heisman winner, a guy who is on his last year of his contract, and they were trying to figure out, could he be the quarterback of the future? You go back to 2016. You're excited about this guy. He has a year where he throws 26 touchdowns. He doesn't even have double-digit picks. And you're saying, okay, if he continues to progress, then he is who we thought he was. And ever since then, there's been a regression at that position from an accuracy standpoint, from a production standpoint. And now you look at this season, you have the one good game against Atlanta. But I'm sure if Dan was quarterbacking against them as well, he could complete some passes. Nope. And then now...
Not true.
And then now you go into Denver, you're 7-for-18, and you have some passes that you're missing that starting quarterback should not miss, and then you add the turnovers. And it's just been too much for Mike Vrabel to see. Good running game, good defense. You have to get better quarterback.
Well, play. Dan's quarterback skills notwithstanding.
Zero.
Zero. I saw Dan the other day hitting those curls with the tank top on.
Don't be
at the ESPN gym. My dog swole.
But what concerns me, and what I think would concern the team, especially given his, his draft history, which, let's face it, matters, is regression.
Right.
You just can't have continued regression and be the future.
And even if you don't have regression, he hasn't processed to the point where he's been the guy that can elevate a team. And look, this is a player everyone wanted to see succeed. Everyone still wants to see succeed. People who engage with him, he's a great guy.
Sure.
He's got all the talent in the world. There's a reason he went into this fifth and final year of his rookie contract without a new deal, and it's because he hadn't shown them enough yet. This is a general manager and a coach that were not with this organization when this player was drafted. Would they have taken him 2 overall? Who knows? They didn't, so they're not married to that either. They had high hopes this year. They've put a good offensive line in front of them. They like the receiving core they have around him, and it still hasn't clicked. And so I think you're in a situation where the long-term ramifications are significant. Is Mariota done there after this year? And if so, is he done now? Ryan Tannehill's trying to put his career together, by the way, after, not working out in Miami. He would probably love the rest of the season as an audition, and then Tennessee's going to go into the offseason looking for a solution at quarterback. This was a possibility when the year began, and it seems to be where we are with the
Titans. Which is why, having all of that said, is there really a decision for next week? I mean...
Well, did Tannehill play exceptionally well?
So there's that.
Would this make it better?
I think what the decision is if you're done with Marcus Mariota. Right. If you feel like your evaluation of him is finished and he's not going to be your quarterback moving forward, then you go to Tannehill knowing that you have to look for the offseason if you really want to find your guy.
And Mike Vrabel wants to win. So he's going to, he thinks or the staff thinks, can get that done, he's going to go in that direction.
Again, no official announcement from the Titans regarding the starting quarterback for Week 7. We'll continue to follow that. That's right. But Dan here,
Ryan believes in me.
I believe in
it. That's half the battle. We showed you before, but let's run through some of these calls last night. This was Tracy Walker, unnecessary roughness on Geronimo Allison. It is a scary collision, but there were folks wondering if Walker's intent was really malicious. Then we get even later into the game, fourth quarter, Trey Flowers flagged for hands to the face. The replay showed that Flowers may have had a hold of his jersey, not his face mask, which is what he went on to explain. Then on the Lions' next drive, Packers safety Will Redmond not flagged
for his physical coverage on Marvin Jones. A play later, the Lions were forced to punt. And finally, less than 2 minutes to go in this one, and a second hands-to-the-face penalty called on Trey Flowers. Listen, our rules analyst John Perry at this game and now weighs in.
Unfortunately, they were not the right calls. And sadly, the left hand's on the shoulder twice. And I went back this morning here in Green Bay. I couldn't sleep based on what happened last night. I looked at about the last 10 minutes just to look at Flowers' technique. He's there. He's there very frequently on his technique getting to the quarterback. We have a younger staff. We have 7 new referees based on transitions, retirements. I think that number's going to get bigger. I had 18 years of experience before I got in the National Football League. We have officials that are joining the league with 6, 7, 8 years total. On the other end of the bookend, we have officials that are, you know, they're not to bring up age, but the game does become difficult and your mind doesn't process as well as you age. It's been a tough 6 weeks. It's tough to watch, especially when it's your profession. The game right now is being impacted by it. And sometimes I sit there in our Sunday command center and I just shake my head.
Well, Hall of Famer Barry Sanders sent out a handful of frustrated tweets on the game last night. Here's one. That is sickening. The NFL needs to look at a way to prevent that from happening. 2 phantom hands to the face calls really hurt us tonight. Yes, we could have scored touchdowns, but the Lions played too well to have the game end this way. For more, here's our Monday night crew led by Susie Culver.
Here on the field at Lambeau with Steve Young and Lewis Riddick, the Packers get the win, but there were 2 crucial calls against Trey Flowers that will surely be discussed quite a bit.
But haven't we been seeing this all year long when games are being turned on stuff that just didn't happen? Yep. It's phantom stuff. And I think that the league has tried to say that we're going to be perfect. At least that's the standard. We're going to be perfect, and then we're going to get review of all the things that we think aren't perfect. And they still aren't necessarily close
yep.
to making it even close to perfect.
Yeah, I mean, for the exact same call to be called twice on the same guy, it's something that really, I don't think this is one of these situations that can necessarily be explained away by a letter being sent to the Detroit Lions and saying, oh, sorry, there has to be more of an explanation about this. And there, to me, it needs to be taken a step further. And how are you going to make it so this doesn't happen again? Because that right there, that changed the entire complexion of the game, not to mention the missed pass interference call against Green Bay on the drive previous to that. Those are kind of things that people are getting upset about, and players are losing games here and losing opportunities to really, you know, continue to compete for a playoff berth down the line. I mean, this kind of game could be crucial to the Detroit Lions.
In many ways, Lewis, it's like to me, it's a hybrid of what they want. Either let the referees just play the game,
right,
all at all, or not. But this kind of, oh, we're going to review certain things that are judgment calls like interference, but then things that we could easily review, we're not going to review because we don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Right.
And then we end up with this in between that, I mean, honestly, it just feels, I feel horrible for the Lions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, talk about a game changer.
Yeah.
The Lions win this game. They're in first in the NFC North.
And you just, the Lions.
With the loss, they're alone in last place in the division.
Well, Susie's absolutely right. It is what we're talking about today in large part. But I want to make sure I sort of steer this conversation forward. We recognize there's an issue. I think there's agreement there. The question right now is how to fix it. Because this game, you know, people want to watch. People want to enjoy. We want to be talking about the game on the day after a matchup like that at Lambeau Field, not the officiating.
Right. A couple points. One, Dan is correct. There is.
Oh, wait. Oh. Take your lap.
Little bit.
I hope somebody's recording this.
In that there will always be human error. We have humans making decisions. There will always be that element, okay? What I would like to see, all right, to get this rectified, is have the group come together and work with each other. If there's a question, okay, first of all, if you're an official, you can't call something if you don't see it. You can't guess on calls, okay? That's first. But second, have the crew come together on some of these high-profile calls, like the Rams, the whole PI thing with the Rams in the playoffs. If they just came together, there were 3 guys that saw that was PI. They should have come together as a group. And there's no, you don't have to have a rule change to do that. You come together, you talk about it, you get the call right.
I think you're right, and we see it in other sports at times. I think that there's trouble associated with that, too. People would say, oh, how can you, but what's happening with NFL officiating is what John Perry was talking about, which is this turnover issue, right? About 50% of the league's officiating crew
has 4 years of experience or less. So there's been high-profile retirements of referees and such. Within the past few weeks, the NFL did a new collective bargaining agreement with the referees union. And in that agreement are a lot of provisions that specify new training programs, that specify more accountability for officials in their first 3 or 4 years, kind of like a probationary period before you start getting pension benefits, et cetera. The option for older officials to kind of take a buyout and move on. So some of the stuff John is addressing is kind of being addressed at an institutional level. The problem is that's a fix that's going to take years. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we continue to have this situation where every single bad call is scrutinized and presented as some sort of existential crisis for the league when ratings are way up, by the way, and people are watching anyway. And I think that the issue is that people aren't going to have the patience to wait for these fixes. But that kind of thing you're talking about, sorry, Ryan, that kind of thing you're talking about can be addressed in those training programs. Like, hey, guys, this is the protocol when this happens.
Yeah, it's cool that the ratings are up. Right.
And, from, they are.
And on this side, that's good. But I've been the dude standing on the sideline trying to win the Super Bowl. I've been the guy that's worked all week for 3 hours and put everything in it and done everything in my power to win and had flags taken away some of those wins. And so that's a different thing. And I understand that the league may not look at it as an existential crisis, but when you may have 3 years, when you may have 4 years, when you may have even less than that to live out your dream and get an opportunity to win the Super Bowl, every call matters. And I get it that there's going to be subjectivity in making these calls because that's part of the game. But when we're trying to give these officials so many options and opportunities to make the right calls, and when we're saying, as Al Riveron, the head of officiating, that we're doing everything in our power to make this game better for the players so we get things right, we just have to start getting a few more right in the clutch moments of football games.
It does seem like it's been a tough go. To hear Perry's point, it's been a tough 6 weeks. By the way, the owners are meeting today in Fort Lauderdale. I can never say that. As part of their fall meetings, and I can guarantee you officiating will at least be discussed.
Yeah, they'll get it all fixed.
You know what? That's a fair point. We won't have a problem tomorrow. All right, let's move on back to this week. Adam Schefter reporting that Cam Newton's foot injury has healed well, and he's expected to be ready to practice after the Panthers' bye, which is this week. Meanwhile, head coach Ron Rivera has said he won't address the quarterback situation until Newton is 100%. So here's the thing. It's leading up to an interesting decision for Rivera. Newton or his backup, Kyle Allen. I say interesting because Allen has won each of his 4 starts and has 7 touchdowns and 0 interceptions so far. Only Dak Prescott and Tom Brady, pretty good quarterbacks, have thrown more passes for their first career interception in NFL history. Allen needs 24 attempts to break Dak's mark. My guess is it takes Cam Newton a long time to get to 100%. He might be 99.99999 for a few weeks. I don't know. What do you do here?
I think you keep it status quo if they're winning.
To.
And I think that my understanding is that's the vague outline of a plan, right? They're in their bye week. They don't know what Cam's health status is going forward. But the feeling you get is that their plan is going to be to keep it status quo as long as they're winning. The guy's 4-0. And
yeah.
You know, why would you mess with that? You risk, and Coach, and Ryan, you guys can probably both talk to this. If he made the switch now, I mean, you risk kind of upsetting the rest of your team, right? Hey, we're winning. Why are you messing with this?
Well, I like the vague, I'm going to add that to my repertoire.
Well,
the vague outline of a plan.
Because I don't think it's in stone. I think that's the whole thing. And they're waiting to see on a number of factors. But if they're winning.
But it is working.
Yeah.
It is working, and teams want to win. Players want to win. And now, we go throughout history, and players understand history. We've seen times where there's a franchise quarterback that no matter what the backup is doing, that guy gets his job. And you've heard some situations where coaches say you don't lose your job to injuries. Well, I played with Mike Tomlin, and that wasn't how he saw everything with everybody. And so what's going to happen is it's going to be what Ron Rivera wants to do, and this team is going to move forward doing that. I think this allows Cam to get completely healthy. This allows you to see what Kyle Allen can continue to do. And honestly, it's kind of a good problem to have.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it is. And, Coach, you've been in this position, too, though. I mean, Panthers have new ownership. Ron Rivera's been there a while. This is, we talk about a referendum of sorts. I think this is a pivotal year for Ron Rivera, too. And this team is winning. Certainly he's got to do
whatever he thinks is necessary to win.
I mean,
yeah.
Kyle Allen has a hot hand right now, not throwing interceptions, throwing touchdowns left and right. He is accurate. He throws with anticipation. Those are two things that he does actually a little better than Cam. Now, Cam is a special, MVP, former MVP. Right. So, Cam is a special talent. At some point, do the Panthers look at it and say, well, maybe we can trade Cam? Maybe there's some quarterback needy teams that are going to offer tremendous value for him. One thing I know, they have options that are good options that are available because this young man has come in and played so well.
I will say I hated to change my tune because when it started, I was like, nah. When Cam's back, Cam gets to start.
Right.
And then when you win four in a row, and it doesn't, and the other thing is, it doesn't, it's the way he's winning, right. But it's also like you look at the rest of the team playing extremely well. It's kind of that
spark.
That Nick Foles type thing that we've seen before. And Christian McCaffrey's in the MVP, the MVP race. And so this gets so tricky because Cam was the franchise. Cam was the guy who won the MVP, you to a Super Bowl. So though this is a good problem to have, one guy I would not want to be in Carolina is Ron Rivera because this is going to be a very difficult decision to make.
It really will be. After two wins, you say, oh, okay, now but three wins, four wins, you say, whoa,
yeah,
this is a
especially
decision.
Because they looked so
decision.
Bad before for so long.
So true.
They couldn't win a game.
They've won four in a row. All right, next on NFL Live.
Yeah.
The Saints went into Jacksonville and won their fourth straight game without quarterback Drew Brees. The defense held the Jags to just 226 total yards, putting the brakes on Minshew mania for now. Saints defensive end Cameron Jordan joked about Minshew's mustache after the game.
Is the stash in honor of the quarterback in the other locker room?
No, my stash was probably here long before he was born.
Oh. he went to
Washington State. Don't we beat them every year?
No, Washington State got good after that. I see some similarities, though.
What was that?
And the two mustaches.
I don't. Mine curls up. His is a sad face.
Well, and just like that, we bring in the man with the mustache, Saints defensive end Cam Jordan. And Cam, listen, this is hard-hitting investigative journalism here. So we start with this. Who inspired the mustache or what?
I have no idea. I think I was just watching, Tattletale Strangler off of SpongeBob. And I was like, I can do that. No, I just figured I've always wanted to do something different. And I started growing a mustache probably last year. I think I was Nacho Libre for Halloween with the family. And then I was like, yo, if I'm already here, I might as well flip it up and see how far I can go. That's sort of what I did this year. My PR team over at the Saints just were like, are you really going to curl your mustache for team pictures? I was like, absolutely.
I think that was a not so subtle hint. I love it. So listen, you're not alone. We've seen some stashes this season. Do you have an all mustache team? Like, there's Minshew, Aaron Rodgers had one for a bit.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I think the most notable one would probably be mine.
Yours. Okay. I like it. Let me ask you this. We saw on Instagram today, you called yourself Cam Drippington. What's that all about?
No, I was just business official today, not yet today, but every game day, every away game, you throw a suit on and you gotta feel your best, play your best. When you look good, you play good, as Deion Sanders would say.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. And you must look pretty good because you've certainly played pretty well. 5 sacks in 6 games. Cam, what's been the noticeable factor in your play so far?
At this point, I just feel like I'm in my prime. I feel that my D line, as stacked as we are, is got to be the focal point for our defense. And that's just probably me being biased because I think our secondary is doing a hell of a job as well. You talk about what the front 7 has been able to do. The linebacker core led by DeMario Davis, backed up with the way our DBs have played, has really allowed our defensive line to put pressure on quarterbacks, get quarterbacks down. And you talk about just the surges of, Sheldon Rankins, David Onyemata, Marcus Davenport. Just speaking praise on the whole entire defense at this point. I love the way we're playing. I hope we continue progressing the way we can.
Well, you're not wrong. 32 straight games without allowing a 100-yard rusher, which is impressive. What's that mean to this defense to be able to continue that streak?
Really, it means that there's so many more players left on the field that we can take control of. I mean, there is an ability where we had a punch out early in the game. We got to create that, we created a turnover. We got to be able to capitalize upon that. There was 2 or 3 interceptions that could have happened for us Eli Apple dropped one. Demario Davis dropped one. That's turnovers that we have to have. So if we're a good defense, we have a chance to be a great defense. And that's something we have to capitalize each and every time we take the field.
Let's talk about the offense for just a minute, because obviously you are without your quarterback, Drew Brees, but Teddy Bridgewater has stepped in. And Cam, unbeaten as a starter, what's his confidence level like right now?
I mean, it's got to be at an all-time high, especially, you know, you have practice, you're taking all the reps with the ones. And, of course, you got Drew Brees behind you, you know, giving hints, helps, whatever you want to, you know, the ideas you want to bounce off. But, I mean, it's not to take anything away from what we had in Teddy. We knew what we had in Teddy. There's a reason why he signed back with us. There's a reason why we trust him to be at helm. We all know that, you know, pre-injury, he was a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. And this is something that he's striving to reattain.
Let me ask you this, Cam. What does it say about this team and the way it's built when you can lose a Hall of Fame quarterback like Drew Brees and not miss a beat?
What does it say? Union? Something like unity, just as a team. You know, when you talk about all three phases of the game, I think the Seattle game would probably punctuate exactly what we were trying to stand for. And special teams scored, defense scored, you know, offense put up points. And that's what you have to do. Whatever game it takes, whatever it takes in a game, whether that be the Dallas Cowboys game where, you know, you have to limit them to 9 points, or the Jaguars game where you limit to a 6, or a shootout with Seattle, you know, where you have to put up major points on the board. Whatever it takes to win. As long as it's winning, I don't really care how it gets done.
Let's look ahead to Week 7. You've got the Bears. That means Khalil Mack. Put your scouting hat on just a minute and describe what you expect for this one.
Khalil Mack, that's one of the names on their defense, right? I mean, you talk about Akeem Hicks, you talk about Eddie Jackson. There's, what, 6 Pro Bowlers on that defense last year? I guess the biggest name would be Khalil, and then you have to deal with everybody else as well. You know, that D-line is pretty solid. And so you put a scouting hat on. I mean, we're going to have our work cut out for us, and it's going to be up to our team to put pressure on them early on.
Let's switch gears for just a minute, because obviously officiating has been an extremely controversial topic, really, from the outset of the season until last night. And you were at the heart of it in Week 2. Listen to this.
Especially on that one, you say a touchdown got taken away. I mean, I didn't even hear the whistle. I grabbed the ball 15, 20 yards down, and allegedly a whistle was blown. Clearly, I mean, a whistle was blown. Where normally you let the play happen, referee, usually tells you you let the play happen and then you go back and review the play. When you talk about that's a 10-point swing right there.
Does it still bother you, Cam, these few weeks later?
You can't let it bother you after, you know, your 24-hour window. We went on to beat Seattle. We went on to go on a couple game win streak. Does it bother me personally? Yeah, that's a touchdown. I ran almost 90 yards for no reason. You can't get that back. I think, you know, that referee staff then went on to the next game and, you know, played the next fumble situation the right way. And, you know, it ended up in a score for somebody. That's huge. I guess learning is the biggest lesson we can all get from that. We all have to learn and be better.
But let's look on the bright side. You did get a gift from Foot Locker, no?
Oh, I did. And I kept the Rams ball, too. I'm just going to label it the touchdown that should have been. It's cool. It'll just go on. It'll go on my label. For sure, you know, I might be a referee for Halloween or something. I haven't decided yet.
Oh, dear. Hey,
I'm going to do better. My pettiness is becoming more mature as I get older. So hopefully that's not the case.
You wear it well. Listen, what did Foot Locker send you?
You know, they sent me a nice little jersey with my little name tag. So I think really it let me know that I was like, maybe I'm good with these guys. So I went in, you know, made sure I was good with all the employees. I was like, hey guys, you know, just keep the flags in your pockets. I don't want anything. I just want to buy some shoes. And then, you know, you talk about, leaving with a couple pair of J's. You picked up a pair for one of my teammates. And that's sort of the end of that. You know, we went on and continue winning.
That's all she wrote. And as you say, you learn and move ahead, live to play another day, Cam, and you've certainly done that. We look forward to watching the rest of the way.
I much appreciate it. God bless.
Week 7 power rankings are out. The Cowboys among the week's big losers. Dallas fell 8 spots to number 12 after their 3rd consecutive loss. Here's Jerry Jones today on head coach Jason Garrett.
I have felt that we've got a lot invested in Jason Garrett. He's evolved into what I think is a top coach. He would be a very sought-after coach if you were out here in the open market.
All right, continued support from Jerry Jones for his head coach. What we can say, it appears anyway, is that there won't be a change at all until the end of the season. We'll see. But nevertheless, panic or patience time, gentlemen. After week six, I'm going to start with Ryan Clark, and we're going to start with Dallas Cowboys. Again, third straight loss.
You know, I have the patience of Jerry Jones with the Dallas Cowboys.
That, which is
and
a lot.
And right now, you're patient with them. And this is why, even though they're 3-3 and they've lost the last three games, they have an opportunity with a game this week against the Philadelphia Eagles to be atop the NFC East. And that's what you want to do. If you can win the NFC East, you give yourself an opportunity to be in the playoffs, and you have a chance to get to the Super Bowl, which is why every team plays this game. And so just right now, I'm not panicking on the Dallas Cowboys.
All right. Everybody agreed?
They were 3-3 last year. In fact, they were 3-5 last year, and they ended up winning the division and a playoff game. So as fun as it is to go crazy about the Cowboys in one direction or another.
Gotta be patient.
It is sort of fun, though. Dallas just sort of bring that on, don't they? It's Dallas. It's big. It makes it
fun, but you just have to look at it and say, you know what? This team's still in it. So let's not throw Jerry away
when those
right now.
Two offensive tackles come back, things are going to start rolling. You'll see.
All right, listen, we'll give you one then. How about Coach Jack Del Rio, the Los Angeles Rams, who also, by the way, have lost a few in a row?
I'm going to panic.
Oh,
I'm a little
really?
Concerned, yeah.
Wow, and obviously Todd Gurley's health
issue. It's not Todd Gurley. It's the offensive line. Okay. We talked about the Cowboys' offensive line start getting healthier. For the Rams, it all starts up front with the offensive line. They're the ones that give Jared Goff time. They're the ones that create running lanes for Todd Gurley. And it's not happening. The offensive line is really struggling right now. And I don't know that it's going to get a whole lot better. I'm concerned about the Rams.
And the other thing, they're behind two teams in their division that beat them and look very good. Whereas the Cowboys, 3-3, still tied for first with an Eagles team that may have bigger problems than they do. So it's all about that context.
Right. It's not a vacuum, right? You have to look at the whole division when you're talking about panic or patience. And so with that, I give you, Dan, the Cleveland Browns, panic or patience.
I got to be patient. I think we thought this would be a team that would take a while to put itself together. It is that. They're young at head coach. They're young at quarterback. They have work to do, but there's a lot of talent. And I just think at some point they'll be, the preseason people are saying 11, 12 wins. I just don't see that, but I think they can still be a team that has a winning record, that contends for and maybe claims a playoff spot. We've seen it in flashes. They just got to put it together consistently.
I think part of the problem here, Coach, we set the bar and we, sort of the collective media, the bar probably set too high to begin with for that Cleveland Browns team.
Well, look at their second half schedule. You have to be patient. You have to give this team a chance to learn some of the mistakes they're making. Young quarterback, young head coach, made a couple mistakes here early. All right, stay together. They've got a good football team. I actually called their game. I was there this weekend, and they had every opportunity to win that game, and they kind of made some mistakes and let it get away, and Russell Wilson took advantage of it. But this is a team, if we don't panic, if we just stay the course, they could finish in a strong second half.
You're panicking.
Oh, okay. Everybody else around here all zen and we all
namaste,
and we coming from yoga and all this other stuff.
You're not zen.
You know what? I would say my biggest issue with this team is not that they aren't, undefeated or they aren't winning. It's the way that they're losing games. They're losing games. They're not disciplined. They aren't consistent.
Well,
you have a quarterback who was the best we ever saw him when he was put into the game against the New York Jets. And we've seen him take steps backwards since then. And this season, the inconsistency, with the O-line, with the protection, and also with the accuracy from a guy who the one thing we said he was going to be able to do is put balls where they needed to be. And he hasn't done that this year. I'm definitely panicked on this team, because coming out of the bye, they'll have the New England Patriots.
He gave a definite panic. I will say this, they have looked a little undisciplined at times, and I know that's part of a young head coach. Those penalties, and they've just been sloppy at times.
Yeah, too many penalties, too many mistakes in critical situations.
Other than that,
they're doing fine.
Other than that,
smooth sailing.
Look at the second half.
Yeah, there we go. Here comes the Patriots. Looking ahead, we've got the Chiefs heading to Denver. They will face the Broncos on Thursday night. Patrick Mahomes looking to avoid a third straight loss for the first time in his young career. Stefano Fusaro in Kansas City and has more on the Chiefs.
After two straight home losses for the first time since 2015, the Chiefs are clearly eager to get back out on the field even on this short week. Protecting Patrick Mahomes is the number one priority on Thursday as he continues to deal with an injured ankle. Now, Mahomes is practicing with the team today, but protecting him won't be easy against Von Miller and company because All-Pro left tackle Eric Fisher is looking like he will be missing his fifth straight game as he recovers from sports hernia surgery. Now, the Chiefs' offense, their high-powered offense, has struggled to hold on to the ball this season. Only the Redskins and the Dolphins average less time of possession than Kansas City this year. They will be looking to control the game a little better on the offensive end by running the ball. And I spoke to running back LeSean McCoy, and he told me he hopes that they'll get a lot more opportunities in the run game this week.
Stefano, thank you. On the other side of that game, the Broncos sit at 2-4. That could mean they are sellers at the trade deadline, which, by the way, is October 29th. Literally 4 o'clock Eastern, end of the league day, if you will. Who could be on the move here?
Well, you look at Chris Harris, the cornerback. There's a lot of teams out there that need cornerback help, and this is an excellent player who's in the final year of his deal. So if you're the Broncos and, I mean, you're sitting at 2-4, they've won their last two. Maybe their perspective changes. But if you're thinking about beyond this year, then this is a player who could maybe bring back a significant return in terms of draft picks and to help you build for the future. You're going to hear other names. Emmanuel Sanders, wide receiver. He's a guy who could be in demand. There's teams looking for wide receiver, most prominently the New England Patriots. And then you'll hear Von Miller, but it doesn't sound like they want to do anything with Von Miller.
All right, look, I'm counting on you to be the one to fix this, okay, to solve the riddle that is Jalen Ramsey and the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh, no,
nope, you got this. You got this. Listen, he hasn't played since week three to stand off. I know he's got the back injury. But nevertheless, what's going to happen here? No pressure.
It's tough because the owner has made it clear he doesn't want to trade him, and Jalen Ramsey has made it clear that he doesn't want to be there, so you think something's got to give. Does that mean the owner has to make a decision about, you know, the head coach and front office situation? And if that doesn't happen till the end of the year, what happens with Jalen Ramsey? You know, you talk to a lot of people around the league about this situation. A couple people have said to me they think eventually they will trade him and get their price, which is very high. They're asking for a first-round pick and something else significant, such as another first-round pick or a player that can help right away. But I think he'll be traded within the next 2 weeks.
Well, at this point, it's just, it's almost, it's not doing anybody any good. You know?
Right, I mean,
it's,
and I think that's, just not, I don't know. I think that's part of the, part
right.
of the plan.
Well, that was good. I'll take that for now.
I don't think we solved it.
No, but how about this? Patrick Peterson, could he finally be headed out of Arizona?
Arizona's telling teams no. I mean, again, this is, you know, you have 2 weeks to go. What happens to the offers? Do they get to the point where they reconsider? But at this point, Arizona is saying, no, we want to keep this player. He's a player that in the past has sort of expressed some dissatisfaction with things there. So you wonder, but at this point, he's not. He's coming off suspension. He's back in the building. He's excited to be there, and he seems to be in a good place with the team. You never say never because what if you get a crazy offer? But at this point, the message coming out of Arizona is no, we're not making this player available.
All right. He could make his debut against the Giants again coming off that six-game suspension. Dan, thank you. October 29th, the trade deadline. Still to come on NFL Live. The Patriots are 6-0. But listen, they'll always take Gronk if he's available. Hear what he has to say about a potential return coming up. Tom Jackson back together with Boomer this week after his Achilles issue. Catch primetime streaming now only on ESPN+. Plus, all the highlights and breakdowns from week 6 and 7 to get ESPN+. Plus, download the app or go to ESPNplus.com. Time now, though, for Boomer's Vault.
Plays into our top 50 plays in the 99.5 year now history of the National Football League. And some, you know, when you look back and scroll them back and forth 5, 10, 15, 20 times, no matter how often you see them, they still defy belief. Play 35, 1989, NFL prime time, and the first game ever for our namesake.
Deion Sanders, Wednesday, played baseball for the New York Yankees. Sunday, played football for the Atlanta Falcons. And there's Deion. Returning punts today. His first effort as a punt returner was not one that Deion, I don't think, would like to remember because E8. He fumbles it. Looks like the Rams recover, but it was called back at a penalty. And so his first return was 15 yards. His second return, Deion fumbles it again. But sometimes the great one, that gives him an opening. And watch Deion get knocked backwards, backwards, backwards. But before the fans could boo, here comes primetime. Deion could go all the way. 68 yards. Welcome to the NFL. Touchdown. 7-0 Falcons. Said he felt like a deer being chased like 100 hunters.
Play 34, 1988. Buddy Ryan's Philadelphia Eagles, home against Bill Parcells' New York Giants and a young defensive coordinator named Bill Belichick. Randall Cunningham, what an athlete he was at quarterback. Carl Banks, 58, has him in his sights, but no! Cunningham throws, touchdown to Jimmy Giles. Unbelievable!
Banks has got contained. Cunningham's rolling right to him. That's it, folks. It's all over. What? Look at him bounce back, stay on his feet, and throw a touchdown. And if you think you can't believe it, how about Carl Banks?
Excellent description on Monday Night Football by Dan Dierdorf. Cheesesteaks for everyone. Play 33, 2015 divisional playoffs. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers need a miracle to win at Arizona. Last play of the game. The play before was one heave to Jeff Janis. What do you do? Knock it down! They don't knock it down! Janis catches another one! Rodgers heaves! Janis catches! And we're going to overtime! Listen to the Packer fans in the building. They wouldn't be as loud when Arizona won the game 26-20. But do you think that's the only time Rodgers did it in 2015? Just a month earlier, after a face mask against Rodgers had prolonged the game for one more play. Rodgers in Detroit. Knocked it down, but they don't. Rodgers to Richard Rodgers. Two Hail Marys, one season by number 12. Aaron had so much fun with those Hail Marys that he decided to do it again in the playoffs the next year in the wild card game against the Giants, throwing one at the end of the first half. We have decided that Aaron Rodgers is the all-time NFL leader in Hail Marys, and he's still playing.
He sure is, Boom. We can't say the same thing about this guy, although there's been plenty of speculation that former Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski might return. Tom Brady recently said he wouldn't lobby Gronk to unretire. He was asked about a possible return on Boston Radio this morning.
I'll give an answer. Obviously, when I retired, I retired for a reason because I needed to step away. So it would be a no.
It's a no.
It would be a no.
It's a no.
Yes, yeah. It would be a no. There it is.
It's a no.
Yeah, but I never say no because I've said no, and everyone's like, yeah, he's kidding.
Right.
They're like, yeah, he's coming back.
But
like
it's legit. It's a no.
Yeah, it's a no.
It's a no. You're not coming back.
Yeah, that's in my mind. That's how it is. It's a no.
It's a no.
Yeah, but obviously, and everyone's like, I kept it. I say I keep it open because even if when I do say no, it's like people are like, yeah, right, he's kidding. So they, you know, they always spin it. So, but in my mind, it's a no.
So it's a no.
I couldn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah, I got it. It's a no until he says yes. At this point, it's a no.
It's a no until
it's
not.
See, now you're doing that thing.
But he changed his
mind. People change their mind.
You're the guy he's talking about.
It's a no now, and it could turn into a yes. That's what I heard.
People do change their mind.
But he said people think he's kidding. That's because Gronk's always kidding, in fairness. But he sounded pretty certain.
I think more so people are just hopeful. Like,
well, yes, I think, yes, especially in New England.
I enjoyed watching him play. I enjoyed playing against him. And sometimes, or at least to me, as long as you're not playing against Gronk, the game is better when he's a part of it. And when
what's it like to play against?
When a guy like, well, you're nervous most of the time. I mean, that's what I mean. When he could catch passes that way, when he was that hard to tackle.
And a
but
blocker.
It was about to say more so, it was that he would drive you underneath the camera because we saw it before. Mm-hmm. He was that type of versatile tight end that really in this day and age, you don't see a lot of.
Right. Now he's a throwback.
But it's a no.
In his mind.
For now.
His mind,
well, he is the one
mind,
making the call,
no.
In fairness. But yes, in his mind, it's a no. All right. It's a no. Again, the NFL owners have convened in Fort Lauderdale, part of their annual or their fall league meetings. Troy Vincent is there, was asked about these calls from last night that has everybody talking, specifically, I believe, to the two hands-to-the-face penalties that really did change the trajectory of the game. Here is Troy Vincent.
Well, we opened the floor up to any questions, anything that we need to clarify. It was a late night last night. There was a pool report that I'm assuming that most have read. There was one that was clear that we support, and there was other that when you look at it, you review the play, not something that you want to see called. In particular, on the pass.
All right, that's fair. Now, before we do this, is it fair to say nobody's all in on the officiating?
Nobody.
We can take that away.
Give me my Foot Locker shirt.
We'll take that one off the table. But week 7, who are you all in on, Ryan?
You know what? The team that the officiating took a game from. I went to Detroit Lions. They have the Vikings visiting Detroit this week. Ooh. I expect them to rally as a team, this to galvanize them, and they will get a win.
All right, fair enough. Daniel.
Ryan knows from last week, I am all in on Russell Wilson as the most valuable player in the National Football League this year. I'm telling you, he is the leading candidate for that award. He does at least everything they need him to do every week, and usually more. He's playing better than anybody.
He sure is. Coach?
All right.
Well,
I've got a little bit of a, might be a shocker for some.
Are you grabbing the San Francisco helmet?
You know they play the Patriots.
This helmet has never been used.
Team. I'm going to
use on hat
Jets, 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 Jets. I'm going to upset the Patriots.
What?
All right, look.
Wait, come on, just for real?
Is it division game?
Yeah, you all right?
Yeah. No, no. We got a Trojan. We've been hearing about LSU Tigers.
Or the ESPN
We got a Trojan and Sam Darnold.
Oh,
he's going to get it done with Greg Williams.
Listen, how about, you know what? I'm not, the Saints are great.
That's a big one, Coach.
How about this? Saints are great, but I'm all in on that defense.
Yeah.
Not for nothing, but I love Cam Jordan. Thought he was great.
Yeah, that's a good interview.
A little bit of that. But 32 straight games without allowing a 100-yard rusher. They are playing so well. And fascinating to me that you lose a quarterback who will walk into the Hall of Fame in Drew Brees, and his team hasn't really missed a beat. So they are
because they're a full team.
Well,
their
because they are
is
full
playing,
team.
They're well coached.
That's my point.
That's
coach.
Great. But did you hear Del Rio pick the Jets?
I did. I was trying to kind of change
the
subject.
Strange
things have happened. I just don't remember what they are. But I'm sure there have been some. Listen, the jump is next. I think Coach will be back tomorrow. We'll see you then. Thank you.